back in the world of reality. Hey, you.
That one. Hello. I hope you can hear me.
I can. Great to see you.
Now I will put in my headphones. I hope they will. You know.
Goodness me. Mr. Cody Hero has joined us today. Welcome, sir. Lovely to see you. How do we invite somebody up to the stage here?
Microphone. So that should be working. Can you still hear me?
Thanks, Milton. Yep, got you loud and clear.
Okay, perfect. Now I can enjoy my coffee.
Oh, that's good. I think we're just having trouble here bringing someone up on stage.
Oh, I like that.
How did you join the stage, Jörg?
There is a button, join the stage. Now I have a button, leave the stage. It's in the bottom on the menu. For me, it's the icon left from the hang up icon.
Okay. It, here we go. Welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Now we only need to hear him. Ah, we can see him.
Can you hear me?
No? We can hear you too.
Yeah, it's got, it's getting there.
Welcome, Simon. Lovely to have you here. Lovely to have you here.
Thanks, thanks.
So many in the community may not know who you are. So I just thought I'd introduce, you know, we'd take a quick moment for you to give a bit of your background in the developer space and where you are with Timpy, if you don't mind.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'm taking care of all things machine learning for Timpy. You know, my background is in physics, which I think, you know, has a lot of connections to machine learning. You know, and I've been working with machine learning since it appeared as a nascent technology that it is. And you know, I spend a lot of my spare time reading you know, published articles on RZiv about the latest developments in machine learning, because I'm quite excited about the prospect of what we're doing at Timpy, in that it's quite a unique approach with this distributed network, and you know, the opportunity for us to leverage federated learning, I think, is going to give us something truly unique in the industry.
Yeah, some points that I want to touch on later in the space as well. Welcome. It's lovely to see you. And Simon and I have known each other for about 4 years. He's a wonderful human being, and we're just really happy to have him as part of the team and some of the stuff that he's developing. I'll see if we can touch on some of it in the space, but some of the conversations we've been having at Starbucks over the last month or so have been really quite enthralling. So, yeah, thanks. Jörg, boss man, we would like to shift and give you an opportunity to give an update on where we are with the network. There's been a lot going on in the background, and I just hope that you would be able to give a brief update as to where we are. I know the community is always eager to have this sort of news. And then after that, I've put together a number of questions that I might just filter through, you know, more on a broader subject. So I'll leave it to you to give an update where you are.
I'm in Germany now. Basically, so we... last night, I started the Datacom 1 and 4 to store into our index. So as you know, we have been moving to TAP V2, and we have been doing it in TAP V1, and now it's all into TAP V2. So the Guardians are now utilized. I think we have, I don't know off the top of my mind, how many Guardians we have now in utilization.
480 yesterday. 480 yesterday.
480 are available, yes. And there was always the question, okay, when do we use storage for that? So we have been for the last couple of weeks. I think we are up to 200 nodes that are actually holding storage right now, and it's getting, in the next couple of days, we are seeing more of that. So TAP V2 has been really good, as it solves a lot of challenges that we had in TAP V1. And maybe I got a little bit back or a little bit more into details when it comes to the architecture and why is decentralization such a challenge, basically. So normally when you store a lot of data, or normally when you have a network like TIMPI, it's all somewhere within one data center, or maybe you have two data centers and you have redundancy and stuff like that. But in most deployments, what it is basically you have one data center that is your main data center, and then you have a fallback data center. So this data center is connected via, 10 gig or even more network connectivity within the data center. So if you now have a server or two server that need to talk to each other, they can even do it sometimes directly, but they do it over the backbone, and then you have a latency from under a millisecond, and you have a lot of speed. When we designed the network, we always said we don't want that. So first of all, it's not feasible. That was is one of the reasons why many alternative search engines have failed in the past, is the cost and the sheer, it's not possible to really, as a startup, to have something like that. So we always wanted, and we wanted to include the community, not only in the decision making, but also in providing, that's the whole design of TIMPI. So now we have to work with latencies that are normal internet connectivities. So we're talking about latencies of 60, 80, and in TAP V1, we had sometimes 200 plus milliseconds latency between storage nodes. And that slows down the entire storage quite considerably. So TAP V2, with its triangulation process, now ensures that we have nodes that are together in the very tight frame. So we say we have something like 100 milliseconds. So now we have nodes that are sometimes even only a few milliseconds apart, but most of them are within the 50 milliseconds realm. That helps us to stabilize the storage network, to make it faster, and it helped us a lot in that regard. It really was the right thing to do. So moving into TAP V2 was very important. Now we have been storing data. We then updated the TAP network again, and we are now back to storing data again. So that's really cool. And with the data that we get, I mean, remember, we are getting something about the 3 billion pages per week, plus minus. So it's a lot to ingest. It's just the way it is. So but we are basically there. And TAP V2 is doing quite well.
So what you're saying here is that this is moving us quite rapidly towards search beta.
Yes. Certainly in the next couple of days, from a storage point of view, we are there. Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, look, as I said last time, remember the cave I was talking about? Mm-hmm. You're touching something the first time, or you're trying something the first time, and there is really no one you can ask. If you asked anyone who is working in the solar industry, for example, and you asked them, hey, we have a distributed network of 500 or, well, how many do we have? 400 plus nodes?
Yeah,
we have a distributed network. Okay, so we have 480 Guardians across the world in a distributed network, and we would like to run 3.5 billion pages per week through this index. How do we do that? Everyone was basically saying, I don't know, it hasn't been done before. It has not been done before. It's really, we have been talking to Saula itself, to the Apache Foundation, to people who have actually contributed to Saula, to the application as developers. We have been talking to those guys as well. So obviously there are things where we hit some surprises, let me call them that way. We have been hitting some things that we didn't anticipate before, we haven't seen before, no one has seen before, behavior of the software that was probably not intended to be like that, but in our environment it turns out to be. So, and then we have to work our way around it and make sure that we still have the performance, but also the stability and stuff like that. So yes, it has been a bumpy road. Reminds me somehow of New Zealand, especially when you go up far north. It's a very bumpy road. So it reminds me on that sometimes. And sometimes you have something that is in your way and you might, you know, take a diversion or something like that. But all in all, there has never been something where we say, okay, that's a completely showstopper or that's something like that. There's, as I said, bumps in the road, potholes that we have to navigate. But we have been making a lot of progress over the last couple of weeks with stabilizing and optimizing and, you know, changing settings and stuff like that. And that helps us a lot.
It's hard to convey what's going behind the scenes to the community, you know, at the shop front. And, you know, like for context, Andrew, Jürg and myself had a dev call last night and it was a way Jürg actually opened up, you know, the source code file and showed us into the inner workings of the network. And it was quite interesting to see the depth there that exists, you know. So we don't always want to continue to talk about soon, but this kind of gives some context as to the real-time complications that we are experiencing.
Yeah. I mean, it's a really complex system. It is. Sorry.
Absolutely.
So it's a really complex system when it comes to we are not just using Saula. We have our Guardian software in front of it. Remember, when we have a distributed network, we don't have root access to the servers, for example. So in order for us to get even log files, it is not as easy as you would just sit in front of the computer or you would have an SSH console into the computer. We don't have that. So the Guardian software allows us to not only push updates, do configuration changes, get our hands on log files, for example, that run within the Docker container. I mean, there's so many levels of there is so many levels of complexity when it comes to us just managing or troubleshooting a Guardian node the Saula on the Guardian node that helps us. The Guardian software helps us with that as we have admin APIs that allows us to pull log files to do some stuff. So, and that's where, it's a lot of moving parts. And then the Guardians are talking to the coordinators, the website's talking to the Guardians, and so on and so on. So it's a very complex picture. I always wanted to do something like a diagram, and I probably, you know, will do it when we have a little bit time. To do a diagram, something like, okay, how does that all work together? Because there's a lot going on within the TAP V2 network.
Yeah. Well, we highlighted that last night, and I think we'll give you a test run on that because Mustengo actually put together an art piece that kind of describes how the network works. And I think that would be very interesting for the community to understand a little bit more depth as to how the network, because there are a lot of elements within it. I think I've got a good question for Simon here. Timpy's Synaptron nodes are powering some serious AI workloads, and what role does distributed GPU compute play in making Timpy faster and smarter than traditional search engines?
When it comes to AI and machine learning, there's quite a high cost involved in when you do inference, you know, I mean, you've got to run on high-end hardware. So whenever you and nowadays, whenever you make a query to any of the popular like front ends on AI, like Perplexity or GPT-4 or stuff like that, quite often there's a lot of parallel stuff that goes on, you know. So it's not just one inference task that has to be run on a GPU, but when you ask a question, it could be, you know, that some planning has got to be done, depending on what type of query it is. It's got to, you know, got to route it to a model that's specifically good at generating code if somebody's asked a question about code. So it's becoming more and more complex as machine learning develops as a tool. So for us, having a federated network where we essentially have a lot lower costs, because we can send out one query in parallel to a whole bunch of GPU processing units, and then wait for the results to come back in. So in that case, you know, having this large federated network has advantages, you know. So.
Yeah. So in basic terms, because you both know that I'm pretty low on the tech scale, we collected web pages. How do they get, this is for either of you as to how the process works, but how do these collected pages from our collector node set enter into the index and then feature in our search engine?
I mean, I can maybe do the first getting it into the index, and maybe Simon can do the what role plays the AI in that.
Yeah.
But basically, the first step for us is the collectors collecting the pages that they get the domain or from a domain list that they get from the GeoCore. So the GeoCore is basically providing domain lists and also receiving the pages. The GeoCore is then giving these pages to a node or to an application called Datacom. Datacom identifies the language and the top-level domain and a few other items of every page to see where is it supposed to go. So what language is it? What top-level domain is it? We obviously, for top-level domains like .de or .dk or whatever it is, it's relatively easy to do. But when you come to the .com domain or .network, .net, and .org, it's not that obvious where this page is supposed to go. We have different regional collections for our storage. So we don't have one big storage that would just, from a design here, it's impossible. So we have several collections. You can say several databases. Where for different regions where we store this information. So the first task is really identifying where's this page coming from. And that's the language part, that's the top level domain and a few other items. And then we will decide, or the Datacom will decide, okay, where does it need to go? And this database is split into many parts, so-called charts. On Solr, it's called charts. So what the Datacom does, it does a hash value of each page to decide in what chart does this page need to go. So let's assume, or let's imagine you have the database is split into 16 parts, for example. Then the hashing will allow us to identify which one of the 16 charts does this page need to go through. And that's basically based on the URL, basically. Once that's done, the Datacom sends then the pages to the chart where it needs to go. And at that point, it gets indexed by the Solr node. The index takes, you have a commit command. So first of all, it gets cached, and then after you do the commit, it will basically get indexed. Index means it will analyze the content of the page. It will look into the language, it will look into stop words and stuff like that. So it will analyze what this page is made of and will index it. And then it is available on the index side. So now you can query it and get this page as a result or as part of the result set. This result set was then, or this querying is then utilized by the web UI, for example. When you do a normal search, then you search in this databases. But also when you have API access and stuff like that. So that's where the page is available. And now Simon comes in with Synaptron to utilize this data for our advantage as well.
Yeah. So so on the AI side, we it's kind of a bit of a feedback communication with the index side in that we utilize it in one way when somebody queries Wilson, because we, you know, everybody has to do what they call RAG, which is, you know, retrieval augmented generation. And what that means, probably many of you know, is that when you take these gigantic models that are very successful, like Llama or GPT, they're only accurate up to a certain point in time. So, it, you know, let's say, you know, the end of 2023, for example, that's what the model, because it, you know, it takes billions of compute hours to train these things. That's just the they're not continually trained and kept up to date. So the way you circumvent that is that you have to bolt onto the side context. So when somebody makes a question to Wilson about the Prime Minister of the UK or something, it might not have the latest information if it's, you know, if it has changed since 2023. So you can't just fire off a query to machine learning and expect that it will give an accurate up-to-date answer. So you do have to go to the index, and that's where we go through the APIs, we communicate with our index to get some information about some unformatted information. So it will, you know, it will come from many different sources about, you know, any information about current prime ministers in the UK, for example, and then that will be attached as part of the context, and then the machine learning model will do its thing. So that's one way. And then the second way, where we also have a bit of interaction with the index, is that we will be doing more and more offline processing. And by offline processing, I mean it's like just continually running on the index in the background, in that we will be using machine learning capabilities that we have developed to be able to analyze some of the data in our index, some of the pages, to get detailed information and inference out of those pages, so that when we're doing things like ranking, we have, you know, the machine learning has analyzed a piece of text, so it more accurately knows what that piece of text is about. So it's more able to give it a rank that fits your requirements. So that's really the two ways that we interact.
Yeah, great. That's a good explanation, because like, even at times now for the community, we get into these tech calls and we have a stand up for the full team, and I'm usually the one that's asking the silly questions because I don't fully understand. But I think, you know, it reinforces the messaging from you guys, you know, as to communicating this through, but also gives a better understanding for people who are not living it day by day. You know, it's quite often difficult to convey the message that we live in on a regular basis to people who haven't seen anything. So appreciate that. We have the capacity to be able to utilize the collector set for targeted collections along the process. And I know that Lucas has been working on some of that. What are some of the key elements that we would be able to target the collectors at?
Yeah, so we have, okay, I from a design here, so we don't have one big index. We have one index that stores, one big database that stores the index itself. But then we have other databases. For example, if you look into restaurants, points of interest, news articles, and so on. So what we have and what Lucas is now also working on, we will have more than one collector. That is specialized in different tasks. So pulling news from websites, for example, or articles from websites. then this collector is then specialized in that and looking for certain formats on websites, certain articles, and that will then go into different databases, collections on our network, so that we have it's a different data format, just, and it also helps us with the AI part. As Simon said, we are enriching the data that we have post processing, so post indexing, with AI to enhance what it is you can search for. Synonyms, for example, is a big area, or language is a big area. So that's what the post processing is about. And we have different databases for different types of data. So we have the large index, but then we have specialized databases, a bunch, that allows us to store more specific information.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great. Looking ahead, what's one technological leap that could dramatically change how TIMPI functions, whether it's AI breakthroughs, hardware evolution, or decentralization standards? Could this also feature in the size of the node network? Currently, our node network is sub 1,500 nodes. And it's always amazed me that we've been able to produce a product with such little exposure to the world. We're not having tens of thousands of nodes. So what about the what technological leap do you think would change TIMPI's direction?
I think one of the biggest one is certainly on the AI part.
Yeah. I mean, I think when the AI gives us a huge advantage to be able to, you know, if we've got a network of 100 or 200 Synaptron nodes that we can run in parallel, then there's all sorts of stuff we can do that cutting edge type stuff when it comes to, you know, considerations to get into some sort of AI agents and stuff like that. Because AI agents, of course, you know, they do need to do planning and all sorts of stuff. And it's an advantage. The more, GPU capability they have at their fingertips, the better. And not only that, we'll be able to have a wide variety of different models, right? So we'll be able to use some models, Llama perhaps, or models that are specifically capable in specific domains, like pumping out code or something like that. And we will also be able to have machine learning models that are regionally specific. So if people ask questions and they're based in a specific location like New Zealand or whatever, we can have models that have regional knowledge and regional news or stuff like that. So we will be able to more easily deploy models that have that level of specificity, I think that's going to be great. And also it allows us to also introduce into the mix even more cutting edge type models. One of the things I'm particularly excited about is looking for the next quantum leap in machine learning. So right now every single model out there is based on back propagation and gradient descent. I firmly believe that the next quantum leap that we will see in machine learning will be in a different type of algorithm, something like predictive coding. Predictive coding is something that I'm keeping a close eye on and following the research papers with a lot of enthusiasm, because it has a lot more synergy to the way humans learn, and there's a lot more, the human brain doesn't learn by back propagation. There is no feedback with back propagation. There is this switch that happens during the training process, is that, information flows through a network, and then the error flows backwards through the network so that you can see how far away you are from the target. And then there's that forward and backward flow. until you have developed this hypersurface that represents the subtle things that you want to know. But with, you know, the human brain doesn't do that. There is no mechanism in the human brain that is a switch that flips forwards, flips backwards. So, you know, a lot of the research is suggesting that this, even though it's underdeveloped at the minute, this predictive coding has a lot of potential. And because we've got this federated network, we'll be able to do research on these types of things and gradually inject a certain amount. We can, you know, we can have like a bit of a beta, you know, release of something that tests some of these cutting edge features, you know. So I think that's going to be huge.
And that comes to having our feet so close to the ground that we're able to move and react to the status of the current space, I guess.
Yeah,
good. I need to find another question here. You guys, every time I interview Jörg specifically, he answers much of what I have prepared in the conversation.
Sorry.
No, it's great. So, to both of you, if you had unlimited resources tomorrow, what's the one feature or improvement you would build into Timpy's network or Wilson AI to take us to the next level?
That's a very good question. I like that. It's a great question. I think it does go towards, from my point of view, it all goes towards AI. Just because if you look at the market, AI becomes more and more important. But the AIs we have right now are still very flawed. So yes, you can ask a question to ChatGPT, and yes, it will give you an answer. If this answer is right, we don't know. And the biggest challenge I have with AI at the moment is every model is so confident that it is right that from a human point of view, from the user, just the normal user point of view, it is really hard to identify or to differentiate if this information is now accurate or not. The models will not give you, hey, I think it is that. The model will give you, it is that. And that's very dangerous. And when you then try to go more into detail, it gets worse. And that's for me, I think, one of the biggest challenges that we have right now. People are more and more relying on ChatGPT and all the other models. And I just yesterday watched a video about people who are, I wouldn't say, yes, you can say addicted to something like ChatGPT. And if ChatGPT is offline, they don't even know how to use a search engine anymore. They don't know how to get information on their own. And then you have models that are still not accurate, that are still, and it's a very, very dangerous part. People believe what ChatGPT is telling them. I mean, I had yesterday a video, there was something like, what was it? There was the, what was it? Something like a cloud around Neptune. And the cloud could basically, is as big as Earth. So that was someone who said that, okay, yeah, that's how it is. And then another one came across and said, no, that's not true. And he asked ChatGPT, and ChatGPT said, no, that's not true. And then we pulled up the guy who claimed that. He pulled up the page from NASA, and NASA was actually confirming, yes, this cloud is so big. Right. But the user who used ChatGPT didn't want to believe it. Well, fucking hell, if NASA says it is the case, why do you believe something like ChatGPT? And that's a risky part where we are moving into right now, where ChatGPT is believed to be all-knowing and always right, and it is not. We know that it is not always right. It does pull something, sometimes things out of thin air, but it is so confident, and it will never admit that it might be wrong. It will always say, no, it is like that. And then if you question it, try it yourself at some point. If you question the answer, hey, are you sure it is? Then it will turn around and, oh, no, you are right. It is not like that. What the heck?
Right. Yeah.
So I think with unlimited resources, we can really have models that are more, and I know I'm using the word aware in AI, which is not, yeah, they don't have awareness, but a model that is more aware of its limitations and then therefore can really give answers that are better digestible and digestible for the user itself. So the user is not just believing what the model is telling them. I mean, that would be my part. And we could obviously utilizing our index, and that's the beauty on that. We are one of the few ones who have our own, we have our own data set. We are completely independent from other data sources. And that makes us really unique. Every other business that works in the AI industry has reliance on data, and this data mostly come from sources that do have a financial interest in showing us only a certain direction of information. So our index allows us to, break this cycle and say, well, we are independent from those guys. We can have our model actually being more open, more knowledgeable, because we have different sources that we can feed into the model, and makes us then better in predicting the right answer. That would be my take, Simon.
Yeah, on a similar line, it would be surrounding AI, because I think there's just so much opportunity there. And one of the lowest hanging fruits, I think, is around this concept of continual trainability of models. Because one of the things, we brought up before is the fact that, these giant models are trained up to a specific point in time. You might ask yourself, why is that, right? I mean, why don't Google and Meta and all these people, why don't they just keep training them and keep them up to date? And the reason is of course, they take billions of hours to train. So, and there's new information coming in all of the time. And every time new information comes in, you have to retrain the whole model, the whole hypersurface, right? So you can imagine you just couldn't possibly keep up. With the current technology, you couldn't possibly keep up with the information coming in. If every time a new news article comes in, you've got to retrain 70 billion parameters, because that's what it is. You can't just take one specific area and retrain that piece, right? But there are technologies or there are research papers and techniques that can potentially solve this problem. And they're around the way that during the training process, these hypersurfaces are manipulated. And so that, right now, without getting into the details, all of the training that happens is all linear mathematics. So it's a bit like when you're trying to fit a curve, you're drawing straight line segments between the pieces to try and fit the curve. Obviously, it doesn't matter how short you make the pieces, it's never going to be a curve. It's just a bunch of straight lines that approximate the curve. But there are, mathematical techniques where you can use what they call B-splines. And with B-splines, every single point is a polynomial as opposed to just a straight line. So those of you who have just messed around with graphics and drawing packages will, you sort of drag this point and it gets a couple of bars and you can move it up and down and you can fit much more accurately with that. And so the advantage and the flip side of that is that if you utilize mathematical models like that, it means you can continually train, because it then means that if you alter one specific point in this hypersurface, which is representing all of your facts in the machine learning model, it doesn't drag with it. It's a bit like pulling a piece of carpet. You can more finely tune that surface without dragging parts of the hypersurface in ways that you don't want. Because one of the things that is you might have heard of in the news is this concept of catastrophic forgetting. And what that is that if you have a big mathematical model that's got 70 billion parameters like Llama, and then you want to inject a new piece of news information to that, and you don't use a fine enough training method or a fine enough tool or enough epochs or enough processing power, you can say in general, you will pull a hypersurface so that it will learn your new piece of information, but it will forget what the capital of France is, which it knew before, right? And that's because you've altered this delicate hypersurface, but you've gone in there with a hammer when you needed to use a delicate tool to alter the hypersurface, right? So that's where there's a ton of potential advancements that are just waiting to be made, because as soon as you've got that fine tool, you can then make something called a continual learning machine, right? even a continual thinking machine, a bit like humans do. They sit there, and even, you know, they're, unless they're sleeping, they're never off. You're sitting there and you're thinking about stuff all the time, right? Machine learning could potentially do that, and then it could potentially be more and more accurate and useful.
Yes. Yeah, wow. Thanks. I think the inner workings of how the AI works is a good explanation, and you know, I appreciate the fact that for the explanation. I see we've got Rangi Dacca is with us, and she's one of my most favourite people in this Web3 space. It's lovely to see you here. She's got a nice comment. How do you even begin to start building an aware model?
I think that the way to build an aware model is to look more closely at the way the human brain works. And I spend a lot of time reading papers on some people who've got, there's a lot of good research done in that. And one of the things, like I say, is predictive computing that, you know, because the way humans learn, they have models, right? They take a bunch of sensory input and they build a mental map or a mental model. So it's not quite the same as the way machine learning works. Machine learning is something that will be a tool that is used to ultimately build something that has awareness. I think, but it's not the end of the story by a long way. One of the things that they look at when they look at the way learning happens in the brain is that on the neocortex, which the neocortex is a 2 millimeter thick layer of cells that cover the entire convoluted surface of the human brain, and there are what they're called cortical columns all over the surface of this neocortex, and these cortical columns. There's this theory of called a thousand brains theory. So that each one of those cortical columns, which is, you know, only 2 millimeters deep and maybe 2 millimeters wide, so it's a tiny little thing, each one is like a machine learning model in itself. Mm-hmm. So that mm-hmm. when a human has a thought, you know, the electrical signals essentially sort of get mediated but transmitted to all of these 1,000 brains that are right. on the surface of your neocortex. And they get activated in different ways to do different jobs. So it's a bit like our federated network in a very loose sense, in that mm-hmm. if we send out, an input, then it can get processed by 1,000 machine learning models that have different specialities. And then the results get weighted on the return, right? And that's got much more similarity with the way the brain works. And I think that's how you would eventually get to build something that has not consciousness, but perhaps aware emotions even. Yeah.
Yeah, well, from my perspective as the pleb in the room, our biggest value proposition is our index. I think our second biggest value proposition is our node infrastructure. And I think what you're explaining there speaks to the possibilities of what the network will be able to produce as time comes forward as we develop out and as technology increases. I think there's a heck of a lot of opportunity, not only that we've identified at this point in time, but will become apparent as the technology advances around us. And we are part of the advancement. So with Wilson, I know that we are not tracking people's activity. Wilson, we're not doing the same either. You know, one of the things that there's been a bit of a topic of conversation recently with OpenAI has been the fact that what's happening with all this querying that we are doing as a group of humans, and concerns as to whether that information has been stored, whether they're profiling on us. Are we doing anything similar?
One of the good things about AI is that we don't know, you know, the representation is in latent space, right? So one of the things we struggle with is knowing how it gives the results anyway, right? So you've seen right. a lot of the talk in the media, right, is that it will, you know, if you ask it a question, it'll spit out the answer, but we can't exactly say where that piece of information is stored, and that's because it's stored in a latent space on this hypersurface. So So one of the advantages of machine learning inherently is the fact that it's we're not storing facts in any particular location that people could retrieve and steal, you know. So
yeah, fantastic. I know this is a really good space because the chat channel is quiet. So I just wanted, you know, like generally we have a lot of questions during the space. If anybody does have anything they want to ask, by all means, I see Mustengo's up very early in his morning. So I appreciate that. Thanks for joining. And thanks to Milton for recording space so people will be able to listen to it back. But if you do have any questions or you want to come up on the stage, you're more than welcome to attend, you know, in person. You don't have to have a camera. This is purely a team decision that we wanted to be more presented.
You wanted to show our face. I'm freshly shaved.
Yeah, and a haircut. So, and I have the pleasure of wearing a Timpy shirt. So,
you know, yeah,
it's.
While we are waiting for someone to ask a question, I wanted to emphasize on the progress that we have made over the last probably 9 months or so was a lot more than we have ever made before, in my opinion, especially when it comes to our entire network and TEP V2, our AI part, and Wilson, and how we process stuff with the development of the search engine, our product manager that helps us to identify the product itself. So it has been really a lot that goes on in the background. So it's basically, I mean, look, it's everyone is working very hard on bringing Timpy to the world that is actually usable, and it has features that are, first of all, expected from today's search engines, but then also approaches that are not common, but that are these are very helpful. So there is a lot that has been going on into development of our UI, for example. What is it we show? How do we show it? Where are the buttons? I mean, it's a lot that's going on the Templar side, the entire ecosystem on that side. So it's really a lot that we have put into the last couple of months in terms of development.
Oh, and we're leaps and bounds ahead of where we started, you know, like, I mean.
Oh, yes, for sure.
Yeah. On that subject alone, you know, there's the Node sale page, there's the Timpy.io website release that we've done, there's the search engine page, you know, there's the login process, there's the Templars, there is network maintenance that we do, you know, from not only from the developer side, but also from the team side. You know, there's communication with partners, there's communications around announcements for moving into the sale. You know, there are more things going on than I can actually list, because it's a revolving feature of what we're doing. And it's not for the faint-hearted, that is for sure. You know, I can be up at 6 in the morning and still be sitting here at 11 o'clock at night, no problem whatsoever, between sitting in spaces or attending to customers or to partners. There is a lot that goes into what we are doing, and you're right. This last, particularly the last 7 months, has been incredible. So,
yeah,
and we are here now. Like, we are here talking about the product. We are in this conversation. We were talking about the AI integration into the index, which is moving into search. Previously, it's been an infrastructure and development of the business side, and now we've got, you know, we're products, baby. We are products.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just looking at our search website, and you know, I know that we can't show it yet, only to a few, and it will be opened up in the next couple of days for more people, and then more people after that, and so on. But it's a process that is important to us, because every time we get a new user group onto the search engine itself to try it out, to test it, it gives us feedback. And this feedback helps us really to develop something that is that is something you want to use. And remember, we are stepping into a market that is dominated by one player, And you can really say it's dominated by this one player. And this one player sets the rules. So the challenge that we always have, or the balance that we need to keep, is basically we can't afford to alienate our users by doing something completely different, because then users will say, I can't get used to it, or it doesn't look like Google and stuff like that. But then you also need to make sure that you are different enough that the user comes back. And that's really a very, very delicate balance process that we have to go through. It is what it is. If we would have a search engine that is completely different to what the user is used to, the user will not use it, doesn't like to use it, because it's new. And humans are basically, as we all know, we like the things how they are. And most people don't like changes. So in order for us to attract users, the normal common Web2 user, for example, we need to make sure that our search engine is a look and feel similar to what they are used to. And then we need to inject features that are very unique, but that are easy to understand, help the user by what they want to do. And that's a very, it's a balance act. And the user trials that we do right now help us understanding where is this balance, when do we go off balance, or when do we have not enough. And that's a really vital process, which takes time, obviously. And that's where we're at right now.
Yeah. I'm excited for what opportunities will present for people that find out about what we have as well. You know, there is a resistance that's building, and we've got to understand that these people have manipulated and determined what it is that we see. So we have an expectation that's been built by one group of people. So offering an alternative, you're right, we have to have a product that delivers what our users would expect, but also presents with the opportunity for them to find the things that they're looking for. Because I don't want to see bullshit presented to me that is all about, you know, somebody selling something and paying a lot of money for it. I want to find information. I'm not the best search user. You know, my partner, I get to get frustrated with it because it's not showing me what I want to see. I just want to see what I'm looking for, not have to wade through all this other bullshit along the process. So excited to see that element of Timpy Search come to fruition and understand that the communication is that there are differences.
That's for sure. Article, we had the other. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
There's an article I was reading. It was from 2023, and it said 92% of websites are never exposed to the light of day because of the algorithms that Google were running.
Yes.
You know, I've read other things in comment sections when people are talking about what Google's done to search, and these are just ma and pa businesses that are struggling to even feature in a search result, and they're paying literally thousands of dollars a year for SOE. SEO, wrong way around. And they're just wasting money and not getting to feature. So, more luck to us.
Yes, I mean, we had another, what was it? Was it, that was an X space the other day with Flux, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And someone had really a great comment around, hey, look at, for example, medical treatments. So we know that Alphabet, which is Google's company, has also their fingers in a lot of other businesses. I don't know the list anymore, but it's hundreds of businesses where they have, their finger in. Obviously, something like that will always prioritize things that they have financial interest in. And the user got it to a point where he said, okay, in some cases or in many cases, especially in the United States, you don't hear or read about some treatments that are available because it doesn't pop up in searches, for example, because there's no lobby behind it. And that's in many cases. I'm not saying that that the other treatments are bad or anything, but as a user, you want to see the entire picture. And that was just yesterday talked to someone here in Germany. Our aim is it to allow the user to create or to build their own opinion. And for that, you need to have as much information as possible. So if you have information from, if it's a side-to-side thing, if you have information on, from both sides, you can create, you can build your own opinion. And in order to do that, you actually need to have all the available information, whether it's information that is widely accepted or it is information that is maybe niche. It doesn't matter. It needs to be part of the, you know, package. And that's what we are delivering.
Absolutely. It's Friday afternoon, and I kind of wanted to
Friday mix morning. Up
a little bit. Wow, you know, with future riders here, and some will be very early Friday morning. But I just wanted to mix it up just a little bit, you know, because I'm always heading in that direction. I've just got some rapid fire stuff. Tabs or spaces as a developer question. Tabs or spaces. Now, I learned something a long time ago doing a computer programming.
Tabs.
And they said, tabs? Tabs.
Tabs.
cool. If you had to explain Timpy in three emojis, what would they be?
Amazing, surprising, what's this emoji that basically challenges?
Strong.
Yeah, something like that. Yes.
Simon, what was the first tech gadget you ever owned?
I built my own scanner for scanning documents with a. You know, using a toilet roll and a piece of film tied to it and some Lego.
Well done. If Wilson had a personality for you individually, what character would it be? Would it be like an old librarian, a rebellious hacker, R2-D2?
Yeah, it would be a digital librarian for me.
Yeah, I think I could see that, yes. Yeah.
So, late-night coding, what's your go-to fuel? Is it coffee, energy drinks, or something more obscure we should try?
Ginger tea.
Water. Tea and water.
Ginger tea and water. Fabulous. What's the funniest bug or error message you've encountered while building the Timpy network or Synaptron nodes?
Funniest one. Oh, None of them are funny. The bugs are a pain in the ass.
Fair call. if you could index one completely ridiculous part of the index first, just for fun, what would it be?
If I could index one
completely ridiculous part of the internet first, what would it be?
Oh, wow. That's a very good question.
Dad jokes.
Yeah, dad jokes, sounds good. Yeah, I like that. Memes,
yeah. Well, we're approaching the hour. I'll just see if there has been any other questions from the community. This thing goes up for the last 15 minutes. Is there going to be a Timpy search engine app in the future?
Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah. Will there be a Wilson app for the future? Simon!
I really hope so.
Yes, me too.
Multi-personality one. Not just a Wilson, but Wilson and co. And like, yeah, build your own maybe. Build your own personality or something like that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm really interested in this RAG training and what capabilities that might have given our data sets, because I know there's a lot of entities around the world that aren't using traditional or mainstream chatbots for any of the education within their own workforce. In particular, I was talking with a lady who works for a government department in New Zealand, and they're not allowed to use ChatGPT. They're not allowed to use any of it. And I was wondering what tailor making we could do, you know, in the future.
We are talking
at the moment with the European governments on one side, because they are moving away from everything that is US. So it starts with Microsoft, it ends with Google and stuff like that. So we are actively talking right now with governments in different countries that will, you know, we will find out if we can help them in AI ways, but also as a default search engine for governments. So there is a movement right now for governments. They have been forced into moving away from anything that is United States, and that's for the entirety of Europe. It is a lengthy process, obviously. It will not happen overnight, but we can play a key role in that, because hey, we are the only one who is not United States. I mean, if you look into Bing and Google, they are all United States. If you look into AIs, they are all United States. Or you need, or you use the Chinese one, which the governments might want, not want. So, exactly. You know, there's not a lot of, of alternative except for us, because we are basically New Zealand made. We have nothing to do with the United States when it comes to, you know, our infrastructure and stuff like that. Yes, we host stuff in the United States for the United States market. That's normal. But when it comes to our core capabilities, especially when it comes to Wilton, is basically we are I think the only alternative right now that has its own data, its own AI, and it's not United States. And that's a very good point at the moment for the European Union and all the countries in there. But it's a process. It will not happen overnight. There is this movement, or there is a directive given to the governments, you need to move away. And this will probably take 2 or 3 years for all the governments to move away. Some of them will be quicker, some of them will be slower. Schools will be quicker. And that's what we are already talking to, because they just need to flip the switch. It's a huge opportunity for us right now, which makes us very attractive to not only Web3, but also Web2 people.
Mm. Absolutely. I have this thing that parents should be aware of Timpy, you know, because I'm wondering what the profiling looks like for children. From the moment they enter into the education system now, they are online in some form or another. And I just wonder at what barrier, what precautions or safety barriers are in place if children are being profiled from the age of 5 years old through to, you know, to your last moment through Google, perhaps. I mean, they'd have a record of all your school activity. They have all your artwork, for even, you know, like all your interests. I look at what my interests are. I use Facebook only for interest groups in some of my hobbies. I had no interest in telling the world about what I had for dinner. But, you know, I wonder if they capture all that information and see as you evolve, you know, Facebook's been around, I don't know, 2008, is it? So it's 17, would that be right? Yeah. And I was an early, you know, participant there, but I just wonder what they gather, you know, what is actually the information. So I'll just move into some housekeeping in a minute, and that'll talk about the node sale platform.
I have to drop in a minute. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. I have another meeting in a minute. In 1 minute,
Will the future dashboard be accessible via mobile also? Node monitoring is from a browser only at this point, because I need Kepler extension for it. I live on mobile. Will it be possible to use Kepler Wallet for mobile and monitor the system via mobile?
Yes.
TBD.
Yes. We are working on the process that allows you to utilize the app, the mobile app, while being authenticated. Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Jörg. You can drop and I'll just pop off these little housekeeping moments.
Yeah, sorry, guys. I have another meeting and they are waiting in the lobby.
Thanks very much.
Pleasure. We do that more often. I mean, we do it irregularly anyways. And I can just repeat my statement from last time. If someone is into a really deep technical drive, just get in touch with Kyle, let him know. And if we have enough people who would say, yeah, that would be cool, I'm happy to do a deep technical drive. And I think Simon would be really happy to geek out a little bit.
Okay.
And hopefully stay on track just a little bit.
Well, sometimes
we can go into the nice detailed greedies. It's no problem. We are happy to do a really geeky session. I would love to. It's okay. probably half a day session. Now, I mean, we would reduce it to an hour or something more. I don't know, but yeah, that would be good. Okay. Just get in touch with Kyle.
Okay, do it. You go do your meeting and we'll carry on the last
Okay,
moments.
Thank you guys. Thanks Have a good much. Weekend.
All right, see you.
Yeah, bye.
Yes, thanks also, Simon, for your time. Appreciate it. There's a lot of stuff. It's hard to squeeze into an hour, an educational but also informative, you know, conversation. So it's not – I wish we could get everybody down to Starbucks around the corner and have, depth of conversation that we have there as well. Just for some housekeeping, a reminder that we want everybody to upgrade their Guardians during July. Jörg will be shutting off TAP V1 initially for the Guardians. There'll be a progressive migration to V2, and it starts with Guardians first, and Synaptrons are integrating into V2. GeoCore will move into G2 right on off the bat, and then we'll be moving the collectors across. So it's imperative that we have everybody on, all the Guardians are on V2. So if anybody hasn't upgraded their version, they would need to do that again. We've got instructions all through the guys in Discord and through our GitHub for the new versions. The node sale is obviously starting for pre-sale on the 29th of July. We're moving full steam ahead on that. The announcement of the sales partner, we're finalizing right now, and we will have more news on that. I believe it'll be early next week because we have to get the information out so people are aware and we can help start marketing it. So this will give people the access to purchasing the fiat via credit cards. So that's coming together. If you're not part of the Templars, I would suggest that you do so. We offer a discounting service system for Templars. And I keep banging on the fact that we've got news coming for the Templars. We are still in the production phase of it. We have a significant part already completed, but we want to be further down the track before we bring it. So we'll keep you updated, and I think I'll bring more information as soon as I'm able to clarify that the next phase is completed and give a little bit of a teaser to where it's at. So lots and lots is going on. There is an NFT marketplace is still being worked out. We've got the node sale page that's coming to finalization. We've got the integration of the index into search and the website. Recently, we had the partner announcement with Flux for hosting nodes on Flux networks, which is really, really interesting. There are other partnership agreements, announcements that are coming. Gareth's been specifically deep working with a number of different projects that are really quite exciting. So the interest for Timpy is wider than what we see, you know, at the front door. So as soon as these things come through, there's obviously a lot to put together and make sure that there's real value in what we're doing and who we're including as a partner. But some of them blow me away, not when we talk about them. So they will all come in time. At the moment, we want to get search up and running, you know, or search into beta. So the process is going to be that we're going to go back through an alpha group before we bring it to Templars. But we're talking in a matter of days at this point in time. So the conversation has shifted to a very, very short time frame. And I'm not going to commit to a day. We you know, where people can knock it back. But it is getting really, really close. So I'm happy to report that. And I'll be happy to see it, because it has been a heck of a lot of work for everybody involved. And there's been a real push to bring things forward. You know, and not just one or two. We've got like a dozen things running at the same time. So thanks to John O's recently for the Guardian and Synaptron checkers in Discord. If you haven't found out about that, there are slash commands now. You must have the Guardian or Synaptron role, and you can verify that in, I think it's the role, choose a role channel in Discord. Thanks, Jono, we appreciate that. Appreciate the fact that Milton stayed up late and has recorded this for us, and those who've come through early or late. Lovely to see you, Lagar. Best of luck for the weekend. And that's me. Sleep well, Mingo. Thanks so much. See you, Rangi. Lovely to see you. All right.
See you.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Happy birthday, Friggy. I mean, hi, Friggy.
All right.
Yeah. All right, then. Thanks. We'll clock off. Cheers. Thanks for your time, Simon.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Okay. See you all.